Michael Tsarian is the author of several books, including Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. Michael is a divination scholar and a sidereal mythologist, which means that he has studied the comparative mythologies of the world as they relate to the concepts of both astrotheology and astrology. Michael is also the head of what he calls the Taroscopic Mystery School, which implements tarot and astrology as tools of divination. The listener can learn more about Michael Tsarian by visiting Michael's web portal, michaeltsarian.com, and that is spelled michaeltsarion.com. There they will be met with a series of websites that are related to Michael and his important work. The Atlantis tale tells of gender-based inequality and suppressed history, which have been hidden behind the secrecy oaths of the various mystery schools, where this information remains available to all high-level initiates of such groups. It is my hope that the listener will find the following information provided by Michael to be worthwhile and fascinating, as it was an extremely interesting conversation that we had. I would also ask that the listener keep an open mind about the matters as discussed in the following interview, as it will challenge most previously held beliefs. However, sticking with the material evidence, Michael Tsarian shines a light on the real and true history of both the pre- and post-Diluvian historical epochs, about which mainstream science and religion has so little to say. The preface of Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation says the following. During the next 10 years, the human race is destined to finally discover the facts about its true origins and destiny. As part of this discovery, we have to address the overwhelmingly important question of how the phenomena of evil came into the world and into the consciousness of Earth's human inhabitants. We have left the question of evil in the hands of theologians and scientists for far too long. This was surely a mistake, as the causality statistics clearly testify the institutions of religion and science have been the worst purveyors of evil that this planet has ever had to endure. After centuries of prevarication and criminality, we can no longer afford to look to these edifices to answer the all-important conundrum of evil. And this quote appeared on page 5 of the preface from Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. One last thing that I would like to point out to the listener of this Controversy Tapes podcast number 5 is that Michael is also the author, producer, and on-screen host of the 22-DVD box set called Origins and Oracles. This is a 60-hour tour de force of everything that is wrong about the world, and Michael even provides solutions as to what we as individuals can do to turn this evil around and finally defeat it and snuff it out into the dark of the night so that it may slither back into the abyss from which it came in the first place. So without any further ado, here is my interview with Michael Tsarian. This interview was recorded on March 15th, 2005. Could we start by you telling our readers who you are and what you do, along with your background?
Sure, sure. Well, you know, my name is Michael Tsarian, and I'm actually from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and that's where I got started into this field. When I was 13 years of age, I took an interest in the Celtic history of that country, which is often not of great interest to a lot of Irish people. I mean, obviously you have people that are interested in it, but for the most part, because of the religious type of mind control that goes on there, especially in the north where I'm from, there isn't really much active interest in the Celtic and Gaelic tradition.
Yes.
So what happens is kids of my age, teenagers, your only choice really is to become involved in the terrorism or some sort of paramilitary type action over there, or basically to just, you know, avoid that and go about your merry way trying to secure your own material success. So, but it becomes very hard, especially if you live in Belfast City. The scenario is that it's very difficult to avoid any kind of paramilitary, you know, activity, because everyone that you know, all of your friends are in some way very much absorbed and involved in all of that.
Yes.
And the injustices that take place.
Yes.
Pretty hard to avoid. But me, because I had come from a mystical background and I was able to, we did know in our family that a lot of this was contrived, then I had to find something else to do, and my inclination was to get involved with the other Ireland, which is of course the Celtic Ireland. And in doing that, I didn't realize that that was going to start something very fascinating in my life, because I actually come from a long line of mystical people, but was the first Anglo child born. So my mother's from India, from the Himalayas. So by being born in Ireland, it was a strange kind of mix.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Yeah, definitely. What are you trying to accomplish in terms of goals with your mystery school?
The mystery school is different than my work on Atlantis. So they work on Atlantis and ancient civilizations and exposing the conspiracy. This is, of course, every man's true duty in life. Any sane, rational human being wants to remove the impediments that are conditioning human behavior and keeping us all in servitude physically. But the mystery school does that and a little bit more. My main work of life, of course, is with the Hermetic arts of divination, tarot, Kabbalah, astrology, numerology. And these are basically great Gnostic traditions that constitute the true, authentic religion of the West. We know that there's an Eastern tradition of mysticism and yoga and self-realization, but a lot of people don't realize that the Western world has its own system of, or its own magical tradition, and that magical tradition originated in Egypt, but it's still pretty much alive and well today. And the West, my particular goal is to try and use the internet as the new mystery school scenario, because I do not believe that the way that mystery schools were handled in the last 30 years, although they were created by very well-meaning people, was the right way to go with these kind of Uranian, Aquarian mystery school subjects, because by very definition, universities, colleges, bricks and mortar type edifices are Saturnian in nature. So how can a Saturnian, edifice really convey or teach Uranian, Aquarian mystery school subjects? It's a contradiction in terms, which is why none of them have really succeeded.
Sure, sure.
But the coming of the internet changes that, because the internet is a very different type of scenario, and I find that because of the global reach, and because it's very egalitarian, and because you can present, if you know how, you can present these very spiritualistic mystery school traditions in a way in which is available to all people of all over the world at low cost. So people today don't want to be stuck in traffic, they don't want to be, you know, taking any more classes which are going to be wasteful of time or energy. And also we have to be very cautious about the kind of community that we belong to. So, you know, the mystery school tradition by way of the internet can now be brought to people's homes, where they can, in the safety and security of their own home, do what maybe, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years you've not been able to do, because in the shamanic time, not everybody was accepted to mystery schools. You really had to show that you were pure in order to hold of even the first degrees of any of these subjects. Then in more recent times, since the 60s, you really had to go at high expense, maybe cross the world. You had to go and try to get involved in ashrams. You had to enroll in mystery schools, physical bricks and mortar type mystery schools. So it's not that I've done a lot of research. I've made a lot of changes in the mystery school tradition itself as a subject. I've revised a lot of the disinformation that is there. But even more than that, what I'm trying to do is make it available by way of the modern technology, which is so it's available to a lot of people in the world. So those two things are very key.
Well, what do you mean by the term living zodiac?
Living zodiac is nothing more. It's just my term for... I use a couple of terms for this inner intelligence. And I just like to call it, you know, the intuition, or
yeah.
The psychologists call it your intuition, your higher intuition, your higher self. The magicians of the world, the magical fraternities call it the higher guardian self, the higher guardian angel. Scientists are now calling it the ancestral mind, but it was long known as the inner oracle. And it was also, I refer to it as the living zodiac, because in fact the word zodiac comes from the Latin word zaon, which meant living creatures or living beings. The idea being that the zodiac is not an external phenomena at all, and if it is, if it gets up into the sky, which we know, of course, it does exist up there, well, this zodiac is a projection of human consciousness. This is what was taught in the ancient mystery schools of Egypt. It is what has been echoed by all of the different fraternities that are the keepers of the true tradition of astrology. And it makes perfect sense if you look back at even the old diagrams of astrology before. The astrology we practice today is a very, very corrupted form of astrology that has come to us after being processed and homogenized by Christian thinkers and by people who work for the secret societies of the world. Ultimately, these secret societies would have preferred to completely banish astrology and all kinds of divination from the face of the earth, and they did try that. But it wasn't successful because, of course, if you suppress something, it just goes underground. So they tried another strategy, which was to keep the semblance of astrology alive, but to change its significance, to affect the calendar, for instance, change it from into the Gregorian system. So they tampered with the agricultural zodiacal calendar, which we all know they did.
Sure, sure.
And they also just masculinized a lot of different signs of the zodiac. I mean, there's a whole subject of this, of how the corruption took place. Now, my work is to go back to the purest original form of astrology, so that we can, again, in the 21st century, visit this powerful archive as it really was meant to be. And that entails some major revision of Western astrology, although we keep a great deal of what we know is in astrology. And the second most important thing is to convey the fact that the zodiac is an internal thing. It is a apparatus of consciousness. This is what we know now after Freud and Jung and the psychoanalysts, and we realize that the human mind can project onto the external world of matter its own psychic content. So the 12 signs of the zodiac, the 12 divisions of the zodiac, are basically 12 divisions of consciousness. And therefore, it's a major revision of what astrology sees, which is that rocks floating in space with some sort of magic rays or whatever, which have never been discovered, never will be discovered, have not been discovered, are affecting human consciousness. This is nonsense. And even though you might meet individual astrologers who go, oh yes, we understand that it's archetypal, well, they may say that, but then their books go right about it in the old way of ephemerises and retractors and compasses and all this mathematical paraphernalia and this left brain approach, which is utterly preposterous, totally nonsensical, had nothing to do with the astromancy of ancient times. And that can be proven, and that is what I intend to prove.
Oh, that sounds very, very excellent. Could you explain why the Illuminati are obsessed with certain numbers, such as the number 33, and its astrological significance?
Sure. These numbers, like 666 and 13 and 777 and 21 that they use a lot,
yeah,
the number you just mentioned, which is 33,
right,
are not negative. No symbol in itself, no number in itself is negative. But very, very negative anti-human societies do use them, and there's many reasons why they do this. But a few of the basic reasons is because they know that these things are sacred, so if they use them, they get their power. Because these anti-human agencies have no inherent power of their own. They have control, but they don't have any power. They've got control because we, the human race, have given up our power. Now, they also get a certain kind of empowerment from using sacred symbols and sacred numbers and sacred ideas. They empower themselves with it in the same way that, you know, a thief can come in and steal something beautiful and then say, you know, it's his. So they have robbed the sacred people. They've murdered all the shamans. They've murdered the oracles. They've murdered the great astrologers of old. That's a campaign of genocide. But they are after that treasure. They want to appropriate it because these are magpies who steal the sacred knowledge so that they can use it for themselves. 33 comes specifically from the movement of the sun in the zodiac. It takes the sun 30 degrees to pass through one sign. But before it's really left that sign, you can add another 3 degrees on because that's the width of the sun itself. So in all, it's like 33 degrees to pass through one sign of the zodiac. And therefore, this number is very important to those who worship the sun. That's why the Illuminati call themselves, you know, that name, that, the ones of the light. That's
sure.
Where Luciferians worship a god called Lucifer, the son of the morning. Well, the son of the morning is the sun. That's why we have elites. That's why we have, we even call children in school the pupils, because it comes from the pupil of the eye of the god of Ra, the god of the sun. You know, we give stars for matriculation when we do good in school. When you graduate, you get a degree, a Masonic degree. All of this stuff comes from astrology, the degrees of the zodiac, you see. So these people are very much appropriated ancient stellar symbolism in order to empower themselves, and because they erroneously think in their mind that they are the descendants of the original Magi who built the pyramids, created culture, and so forth and so on. They literally think of themselves, you see, as the descendants of these ancients. And of course, in many ways, they are the descendants of the Freemasons and the guilds. And they think they have the right to use these symbols. Now, I would say, yeah, they do have the right, but they don't have the right to use those symbols to suppress other human beings. That's my problem. I don't care how many Masonic orders or how many secret societies exist in the world. They perfectly have the right to exist. It's that these secret societies are now very much being used because they've been infiltrated by satanic forces. These fraternities and secret societies and subversive movements are now manipulating human beings to degrade and to enslave, which was not originally what they were meant to do, and which their own grand masters often lament took place. You only have to go to their own works and you'll find this whole infiltration being lamented by the original masters of Freemasonry and by some of these other secret societies. They knew they were being taken over, but they could not do much about it.
Yeah, sure. How and when did you discover the truth about Atlantis and the entire pre-Diluvian history?
Well, obviously that's an ongoing issue. I've had great help in that process because of the enormously brilliant erudite scholarship that's been done before. I have got my own ideas, obviously, but a great deal of my work merely rests on the work of some other very, very great scholars. I originally started to get the first glimmers back in 1979 when I read the work of a very, very famous Celtic artist whose artwork is actually on the front of my book on Atlantis. And his name is Jim Fitzpatrick, and he sort of retold the Irish myth in a much more coherent way than it had ever been done before.
Yes.
And then there was people like him, and there was Mary Kane, and, you know, Lady Catherine Maltwood, who had studied the great zodiacs in England. And as I said, I come from a mystical tradition. I do not come from any outside field like science or art or business or computers or technology. I am from the metaphysical tradition. I don't come from outside of it. So I've already had people in my own family and my closest circle. I grew up amongst free thinkers like Sir George Trevelyan and, you know, Paul Solomon. My grandfather is Tara Singh, who was a world teacher. I grew up in the Krishnamurti society. So we always had a very great pressure put on us to think outside of the box.
Sure.
In regards to the Celtic tradition, it's not so much, it's not really amazing to come to these conclusions because it's all hidden in plain sight. Anyone who uses their eyes and their logic, who goes to these Celtic countries and just, I mean, even you go to South America and look at the Nazca lines in Peru, I mean, it dawns on most of us who are rational that we are not being told the truth about, you know, the builders of these megalithic sites and so forth and so on. I mean, you know, Eric von Däniken has been a big help, opening the eyes of the world to these anomalies. So again, it's about it's a series of reading and studying the work of other people, and then keeping a very open mind and believing what your intuition basically is telling you.
Sure, sure. I'm operating on, as I said before, on the principle that this is an introduction to you and your work, and I wondered if you could just explain to the readers exactly how humankind became genetically manipulated. When and how did this take place?
That's the story of the genetic alteration, or shall we say the altering of our DNA, the what I call the violation of our most basic sovereignty, our genetic sovereignty, is one of the most interesting stories, and the time has come in this world to let the story now be known, because it actually, my work hinges on the philosophical question of how the concept of evil came into the world and into the consciousness of human beings. And mostly, of course, when we have looked to why evil has come into the world, why we are beset with this problem in the world, we generally have turned to religion and to science for the answers. And of course, neither religion nor science has really given us the answer. In fact, some people could argue that the institutions of science and religion are the biggest purveyors of evil we've ever had to, you know, endure. So, I have learned from studying the ancient mythologies of the world that these ancient folk tales and legends and mythologies have a lot to tell us about the coming of evil. And if you read very closely into these ancient mythologies, like the Book of Enoch and the Popol Vuh from Mexico and some of the other ancient chronicles and legends, you'll find that they definitely mention that our planet was visited by alien beings, possibly from the star system Alpha Draconis, about 50,000 years ago, and these individuals came to our planet, founded Atlantis, and on Atlantis began to first try to mate with the Earth women, and then when that proved unsuccessful, they did something very taboo, which was that they involved themselves in transgenic experimentation in which they crossed their own alien DNA with the DNA of our forefathers here. And the consequences of this, one of the consequences of this, was that the human being now became a schizoid creature. He had incredible advancement intellectually, because these alien beings, of course, in order to be able to fly across space and whatever, they were very technologically advanced. So the being that they created had a lot of technological advancement, but that being also had a lot of spiritual qualities.
Sure, sure.
But also what happened was, there was great conflict. These two types of DNA were never meant to be crossed. It was an absolute violation of Earth sovereignty, and it was a violation of genetic sovereignty. It's the worst violation of sovereignty anything you could ever even imagine. And the consequences of that, the consequences of this hybridization program, I believe, caused what we know to be the injustices and the cruelty and the penchant for sadism and violence that human beings actually have, because it is the only thing that distinguishes a man from the primates and from other creatures is his sadism, his cruelty, his violence, and the fact that he even gets pleasure from doing those things.
Sure, sure. In your Atlantis book, you list a very extensive timeline at the back of the book, and I wondered, in your opinion, what has been the single most evil act of all time?
I would say it is this... Without doubt, it is the effect of crossing our DNA like this.
Yes.
Because that is the thing that precipitated not only our psychological schism, but it caused untold problems for us historically, socially, you name it. That is the problem, the outset of the problem. Everything else stems from that. That these individuals, just like in John Milton's Paradise Lost, their idea was better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. So when they came to this planet, they wanted servants, they wanted slaves, and they did, just like the Book of Enoch talks about, and the apocryphal books of the Bible and so on, these characters, who were humanoid, they basically were humanoid, you could walk past these people in the street, you probably wouldn't even notice it, but they were very advanced, and they decided to do this reprehensible act. And in fact, in the Book of Enoch, there's even a quote from the leader of these alien beings, and he says in it, I know you probably will not join with me in doing this sin that we know to be a sin. So they even knew that it was a sin, but they went along with it anyway. And this effect broke cardinal law. It basically was a violation of nature's law. So any of these Christian philosophers and what have you, and the scientists who are telling us that the coming of evil into the world is just purely a natural mistake, it's a flaw in the mechanics of nature, it'll all be resolved as we evolve through time, is one of the biggest lies that anyone can ever want to embody, because nature, as we know, is in perfect harmony, in fact, from the largest neutron star down to the smallest quantum particle. So how on earth could it make a blunder in its highest species, man, a blunder which is so severe that it would undermine her own order, which it is now doing?
Yes, yes.
Nature just doesn't make mistakes like that. And anyone who even thinks that it does, or anybody who falls for this kind of mind control, is actually complicit in the raping of the earth and in the murder of all the indigenous people who are close to nature. Because if it is insinuated to us that nature is in fact flawed, well then it justifies thinking of nature as a lesser. We don't worship nature or revere it anymore. We think, okay, this is just a dumb thing. Hey, we've got this schism inside ourselves. Nature is responsible. Ergo, we can do to nature and to animals and to indigenous tribes whatever we damn well feel like it. And that's exactly what has been going on here, not just since the Industrial Revolution, but all the way back 11,000 years from the rise of the great empires, what we call the first historical empires of Asia Minor.
And, of course, this all ties into the destruction of matriarchal society, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the role of women, which I go into a great deal in the book, this, again, is central to my work. I do, in my book, resolve a lot of disinformation and a lot of disconnects that haunt the work of other people in this field, because one of the things that I did do was I did read pretty much everybody else that is, you know, writes in this area, and I have read most of the comparative mythologies of the world, and therefore I have a full grasp of what makes their work brilliant, and I also have a full grasp of where their big errors are, or the big X factors that they don't explain. And one of the things that has never been wholly, truly explained is this whole idea of why it is that women have been marginalized, why they have been denied office politically and certainly religiously down through the years, why the book of Genesis starts with the blaming of the guilt of Eve, and so on and so forth. This also seems very preposterous to me, but when you read the ancient records, finally the truth comes out, and that is that the Atlanteans, or let's say their descendants now, their bloodline descendants, have never forgiven women for a certain crime that they committed back about 13,000 years ago, because when the Atlanteans were being overthrown by these creatures that they had created, it was the women who were very much involved with that rebellion. And it's never been forgiven to them that they were involved in this rebellion. And that is why there's been massacres, you see, and all sorts of sequestering and marginalization and punishment that's been meted out to them, especially by Judeo-Christian, elites.
So are you basically saying that these entities, let's say, are fully capable of taking over the consciousness of a human being? Is that correct?
Yeah, they do that. They've done it by the fact that they have basically created us. Their descendants, who are behind the thrones of power in the world, absolutely know how to manipulate us. My goodness, that's very easy for them to do. These things are not at all difficult. They've already had control of our biology, so it's and they keep us under fluorescent lights in their schools for 18 years. We are about as susceptible as you could imagine.
Sure.
Barely resist.
Sure.
Kind of, groupthink, consensus trance that comes over the media every day. Oh, nothing could be simpler. In fact, they're pretty much shocked about how easy it actually has been to control the so-called intelligent people of the world. You know, in the last chapter of my book, I go into a bit of that, about how our own pride, how when we go to school and colleges, we're just dying to, you know, be a slave. It's literally, you know, whose are these trophies and awards that we're coveting? You know, we are just happy, the slave is happy to serve as masters and be involved in this consensus trance. And the elites of the world know that.
Basically, in this type of a situation, how were you able to research this? Were you given access to any interesting archives anywhere, or did you just go on published, public available information?
Oh, no. If you went just by what's available to you publicly, you'd never find the answer to this.
Yeah, sure.
I have a huge collection of out-of-print books, which is, you know, I've spent a lot of money on trying to resource. I'm like practically an authority on out-of-print books, especially dealing in these subjects. Also, as I said, from my Eastern side, we were told by our grandmothers, and from the Indian side, a whole other story of the the rise of civilization than what we're taught in the West. So by way of being part of a clairvoyant background, by having Eastern side to my family, with very wise people there, we had already grown up hearing a very different story about the coming of the races and the takeover of the world and the history of the First and Second World War and what have you in the British Empire. We had already heard that it was an occult. It was based on occultism. This is information that has been kept from most of the world, even though I say it's mostly hidden in plain view. But, of course, the Western person just doesn't see it. But in Eastern lands, we are much, much more educated in these matters by our forefathers, who are very, very aware, just as the third world people now are very aware, that there is, in fact, a big brother operating in the world. I mean, you still have to beat that into the heads of most middle American Western individuals, but my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You go to the Amazon, you go to South America, you go to India. You know, everybody there has known that for hundreds of years. I mean, you just need to pull aside your curtains down there, and you can see Big Brother happily at work, destroying your forests, polluting your oceans, spreading its designer diseases, and basically annihilating your people. So there's never been any doubt in the third world that there's a thing called a Big Brother operating in the world. It's only here in the apathetic and, this what Gore Vidal calls this culture of amnesia, that we can afford that luxury. But even that luxury is soon passing away. By 1997, I've already predicted, and I don't really have to be an astrologer to do that, but by 1997, even middle American person is going to know there is a conspiracy, all right, and there are secret societies operating in the world. The time for these people's exposure is coming.
Have you ever thought about how the awake among us might implement a spiritual plan of action to take back our planet?
Yes, that's the theme of the last chapter of the Atlantis book, is solutions. I am very solution-oriented.
Yes.
It was never my intention to ever even get into writing anything about this subject without affording solutions. So in all my DVDs and in the book I'm making and in all the DVDs I produce, and even all the talks that I give publicly, it is very solution-oriented. And the solutions are very simple. First of all, we're being facilitated by being in the 21st century. Certain solutions could not be applied because the time was not right. So, of course, that has gained a lot of frustration. I understand that. People have been jaded, frustrated. They've given up hope. But what they have not maybe understood, which is known to good astrologers, is that the sidereal time must be right. That literally means, just as we say in daily life, the time must be right for something. Well, so it is on the celestial level. The celestial timing has to be right. And the celestial clock has now moved into the right time. Just like the Maya calendar predicted, the last countdown of 13 years from 1996 to 2012 is a time of awakening. They called it the Age of Revealing. It is very similar to the coming Age of Aquarius. The planet Uranus, which represents the spirit of rebellion, is very prominent right now. So there are many ingredients that make it much easier for the truth to get out. Now, what truth? What solutions? Well, first of all, know thine enemy is the most important beginning. And so my work is very much dedicated, as yours is, to just assisting people to know that there is an enemy and how to identify it. Because before you can do anything, you have to know that there is somebody shooting at you.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, yeah. Before you can arm yourself up. It's just like the Bible said, know thine enemy. That's the first cardinal law, is to realize and then study this enemy. Don't act yet, but until you have full understanding. Then you have to have the patience to wait to find out what kind of weaponry that you must use, because ultimately this is not a weapon, this is not a fight of physical weaponry, this is an intellectual and spiritual fight, just like you said at the beginning of this interview. This is a fight that involves consciousness and transcendence of consciousness. and a shifting to a higher level of insight. I am 100% agree with you on that. And therefore, in the last pages of the Atlantis book, I kind of put it like this. I liken the coming of these secret societies, and I liken the intervention of these alien forces in ancient times to the coming of a virus into a cell, a healthy cell. We can imagine the Earth to be like a sort of a healthy cell, which is then infected by a pathogenic force. Well, as we know, if we're having that problem physically, there are two approaches. There's the allopathic and the homeopathic system. The allopathic system is just a slash burn, you know, methodology.
Sure.
The homeopathic system says strengthen your own immune system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believe it's exactly the same advice we need to apply to the planet. We do not implement the solution per se. And that's why it's never worked. The human being, you see, is far too impotent, far too weak, far too backward to ever really do enough waving of placards, and certainly if he's trying to do within the political arena, he's just wasting his time. The Earth itself is a living organism. The Earth is a spiritual and living power that knows exactly how to rid itself of any virus or disease that has infected it. But we are, the human beings of the Earth, are, we could consider us ourselves to be like the lymphocytes of the Earth. The only trouble is we have forgotten how to clean the Earth. It used to be in the shamanic times, we knew how to bring healing to the Earth. Because of all the massacres of the shamanic peoples and the Gnostics and of the Wicca and of the different oracles throughout time, these secrets have largely been lost. Just as the homeopathic tradition has been lost when we come to physical diagnostics and healing, so have these greater issues been lost, and they've been preserved by the dark side, so they're using it all the time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what you were saying a moment ago about the strengthening of the immune system, you know, I was supposed to be dead 15 years ago, and I knew 35 people that did die of AIDS. These were associates of mine, people that I knew who were patients from all across the United States, and the ones that believed in their souls that they were not long for this world, they died the absolute fastest.
They were, right.
And as far as I was personally concerned, I put myself into a program that involved many disciplines put together, actually, and I'm here today healthy, and I've been in complete full remission for 9 years.
That's right. And it's because you applied the basic homeopathic truths, and these have worked for thousands of years. They will continue to work. The Earth is self-regenerating, everlasting, and eternal. One order of the world may pass away. So yes, by 2012, the Maya may be right, that the world as we now know it may indeed pass away, but the Earth itself will always be here. And those who are in alignment with its laws will also survive. So we are coming to a point now where there is a countdown, not to extinction, like a lot of people think, but actually a countdown to enlightenment and to freedom. A lot of individuals are projecting their own fear externally because they're riddled in fear. That's the whole plan. So the idea, and of course we have now the rise of the paranoid society. On television, you know, everything is wrong with you, and everything's bad for you.
Yeah,
everything's
yeah.
bad for you, you know?
Yeah.
This is what we
yeah.
got. This is this paranoid culture where people are going to be afraid to go out soon. So, yes, there is darkness before the storm, but the storms that are coming are healthy storms. And the solution is for individuals to discover again their shamanic tradition that knows how to empower the Earth itself, because the Earth is the mainframe. The Earth is the central computer bank that knows how to get rid of the problem. We are only part of that solution, but the Earth is the one that itself knows how to rid itself of these pathogenic forces. The dark side knew this, which is why they always had a campaign of genocide when they expanded their empires. Genocide always attends the expansion of empire, because of course when they went to these foreign countries, Africa, India, and America, they knew that the shamanic people here were doing their dances, doing their rituals habitually at the right places of the earth grid, at the right sidereal time.
Sure, sure.
To affect healing in the world. And this is just one of the most important components of the healing. But on a lesser level, but still very important, is of course just simple education. People need to study the enemy, find out what's going on, collaborate as much as they possibly can, And one of the most important things, and I think you were already hinting at it earlier on, and this is really in my DVD on the subject, it's the number one thing, and that is to make sure that a person's own emotional body, that's their own emotional and psychic body, is already exercised and clean and hygienic. Because the individual who is not psychically and emotionally and morally hygienic has no chance whatsoever, capital W, in affecting positive change outside. The politician doesn't understand that, and the well-meaning activist doesn't understand it because they're not coming from the metaphysical tradition. They're just well-meaning good people who want to change the world, and they, unfortunately, they head straight into the political pigsty to try and do that, which has already been created by the Illuminati, by these dialectical masters.
Yeah.
So nothing ever gets done. If you, however, like myself, come from the occult, magical tradition, the mystical tradition, you do not even think of trying to affect change outside of yourself unless you have already initiated it within. This is the main issue why a lot of efforts being done, you know, by the Amy Goodmans and everybody else in the world, and God love them, it's great to see that. But the point is that the weapons that are being used against us are occult in nature. Therefore, we have to respond in kind with occult weapons back. And in occultism, in the mystical tradition, you cannot do that unless you have first been purified by fire and water. That means trial and tribulation.
Sure.
So that you can withstand the kind of, you know, the challenges that are going to come to you when you take on these forces.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's been my experience personally. I've been studying various kinds of magic for 25 years now. And these trials are very intense. I can relate to that.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, we're talking, because to even be in the last 13 years, to still give this information out to people, it's absolutely vital, because if they arm up and head out against these kinds of forces who are extremely matriculated on the spiritual path, they don't realize that the dark side is very powerful, because it has done its homework. It knows every aspect of our nature, every aspect of our libido, every aspect of our drives, every aspect of our desires, our sexual nature, you name it. They have a thorough working knowledge of the species that they have helped, that they actually once created. We have next to no knowledge of them. So we're working at a massive deficiency here. We're working in the dark. But that darkness can be lightened up if we start to do our own spiritual homework. You become invulnerable. You have the best weaponry of all. Do not try to fight these individuals in the arena that they have themselves created.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Come in.
Sure.
But unfortunately, the Western world has not understood. And even though some fantastic activists are out there, I won't name any names because a lot of them are my mentors, but the problem with these individuals who work strictly in the political arena is that they're not going to see even a modicum of real change, because they're fighting with the weapons that have been handed to them by their enemy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it becomes a tug of war that is going nowhere. In fact, the rope that you're pulling is actually end up strangling yourself. It's the old Bruce Lee. The answer is the old Bruce Lee Zen Taoist way, and that is when you are so inherently strong that your enemy cannot destroy you, then you have won.
Have you ever come across hostility to these ideas? And how would I present this material to somebody who is stuck inside of an organized religion structure?
Right, well, that's questions that are always on my mind, because of course I've lived with nothing but hostility. It's not been the question of whether I've received or met with hostility, it's I've met with nothing else but hostility.
Yes, sure.
I was born.
Yep.
It is an extremely pleasant experience when you go on a show or you speak with a group of people. As I must say, it does happen. Obviously, in America, I've been surprised by the overwhelming interest in these subjects. But on the whole, in one's daily life, in one's intimate circle, oh my God, there's nothing but all kinds of egoistic, knee-jerk, defensive reactions against any kind of light, any kind of truth. So, yes. Now, my answer to you is exactly the same answer I've employed in my own life, and that is I do not bother trying to ever engage anyone that I can see is lost in their own miasma, because it just wastes my energy. I have learned very clearly how to economize the energy. These individuals also need to be where they are. When you see somebody in darkness, don't automatically rush out to try and save them. This is the old Good Samaritan lie. It's not needed. Individuals who are in that kind of mindthink They need to be in that mind thing. That is where they are at this stage of their destiny. I do not believe, you see, that we need to awaken all of the people at all of the time in order to effect great changes in the world. This is a completely, has no mystical precedence whatsoever, and I don't know where it ever came from. I know it's born out of a virtue. I know that everyone wants to, you know, help everybody else, but the only one that you can help is yourself. When you then offer forth knowledge, you do so as a gift to humanity, not to human beings. There's a difference. Humanity is a concept. Humanity is a thing that has not yet been born in the world. But if you try to go out altruistically serving human beings, your life will be a perpetual tragedy. So again, this needs to be understood, that I am not a martyr. I do not believe in selling this information to the swine of the world, or trying to enlighten fools. And the reason is, there are too many great souls who have already gone to their grave that way.
Sure. Yeah,
I am not
absolutely
worried about, you know, trying to save the people who will drag you down into their mess, and who will try to darken you with their confusion. Those people who are out there who need to learn the light will learn that truth, whether it's from you, whether it's from me, or whether it's from some other complete other source that we could never fathom. It's pure egoism to think that we have to be there with our knowledge to give it to somebody. When that time comes for that person to be awakened, they will be awakened by their own higher source, will lead them wherever they need to go. So it takes the onus off of us. A lot of people who charge around trying to awaken the world are actually some of the most vain people that you'll ever come across. Yes, they disguise that vanity under what appears to be a necessary, you know, positive thing. But underneath that thing is ultimately a great deal of vanity.
Sure. Through my own research, I've been very aware of the use of magical words as product names and sigils as corporate logos, and I wonder if you could comment on the role symbolism plays in the Illuminati agenda.
Well, it is actually plays a central role. From one of the things that got me into all of this subject is just what you've spoken about. From 13 years of age, I was studying corporate symbolism and subliminal imagery, and I didn't know at that time that it was occult in nature. I was just wondering, what in the hell is this stuff doing here? I didn't realize that one day would come when I would realize the reason that these symbols and colors and rhythms and tones and sigils were being used. And now I have, you know, I've talked all over the world on this very subject and have a DVD coming out that goes very deeply into all of that and why they use it. Again, it's to empower themselves and it's to dumb us down. These ancient symbols that are very powerful are therefore very attractive to our ancestral mind because we recognize them. Our soul recognizes them. But if they take the symbol of Mars, which has some very positive spiritual meanings, if they take the circle or the pentagram or the sun, all of which are connected to spiritual states of consciousness, and they stick it on a bar of soap or on a stupid car or some toothpaste, what is happening is actually something incredibly satanic is taking place. But what is happening is that we are being attracted by the symbol because that symbol once had to do with our spiritual uplift. But now that symbol is on something that is going to pull us down into our lower chakras, into our lower drives, and into our appetite body. So we, with one hand, are reaching out for it, but with another hand, we are resisting it. So what happens is we're in inner conflict. We want what that symbol represents, but we realize that it's on some stupid material thing that's actually helping to impoverish us. So the people who use it keep us in a perpetual state of conflict. And this causes a lot of... it's a laundry list of psychic and sexual, maladies. These symbols cause this. Subliminally, the children are watching TV. All of their young adult shows that they watch in the morning are filled with the most evil, satanic, sexualistic symbolism. The parents are not even aware of it. And this is affecting the constitution of the young, which is very much concerns me.
Sure.
And it's always infecting our mental space as we, you know, drive down the boulevard. You're seeing all of this symbolism. And we have to understand, you see, what these elites understand. And that is, words are a very recent form of communication in the history of the mind and in the history of human beings. Language, communicating through words and language is very, very recent historical phenomena. Before we had the gift of language, men and women used to communicate by symbolism, by colors, by rhythms, by numbers, by sound, and mudras, and all sorts of things like that, by amulets and talismans. They would communicate very deep things that words still cannot communicate. So these individuals are working on the deeper levels of our mind so that they can control those deeper aspects of our mind, and that way also then control our conscious mind.
Studies have shown that children as young as 3 or 4 years of age are able to demand specific products, demand for specific products by their names, and they even know the packaging by sight. You see this in the supermarket, and it's also all over, obviously, children's television with the mandatory so many commercials per hour. Now, is this this negative attachment, if you will, is this the result of the children being so subjected to a lot of hours of television, the agenda behind the products themselves, or a combination of these things?
Well, it's definitely a combination. None of these things in themselves will ever work
to create
these effects. It's 100 different things moving at the same time. But again, yes, we do have a barrage of this psychic weaponry coming at us. But the real key is that even though that's coming at us, if the parents were able to instill a center in these children, it wouldn't matter what's coming at them. They'd be armored to the teeth with spiritual center and with a strong sense of selfhood, and therefore they'd be pretty much impervious to these things. So it's not just the fact that, yes, okay, it's Big Brother, it's a psychic dictatorship out there that's sending the stuff towards us. Yes, of course it is. But you also have the choice to be able to defend yourself. Now, we are living in a society where the parents are literally so gaga about this, so undereducated about this, so toxic with it themselves, that they bring children into the world and basically, put them in front of this mess without censoring it for them. The child is not responsible. So therefore, yes, it's a combination. There's no center in the child. The real problem is that there's nothing in the child, so naturally it's going to turn to what it appears to be, what appears to fulfill its fantasy, its spiritual component. The parents of the world are not spiritually empowering or enriching their children, so the children have no alternative but to turn to what appears to be the spiritual oracle, the spiritual feeder. That's how the devil works. That's how the satanic force works. It puts on the mask of the friendly one. Just like Spielberg showed in this Poltergeist, it has a way of luring you in with these sacred symbols, and sacred meanings. And for instance, television, even why adults are attracted to it, is because it's the one thing that you don't have to give anything to in order to get something back. In all other human relationships, you see, there's a give and a take.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And this television,
Sure. It
does everything for you. All you got to do is sit back, lie there passively, and it does everything for you. And this, of course, becomes very necessary in human life because we are giving every ounce of our energy 24 hours a day for nothing back. So, you see, we have to look outside the medium itself to find out why would we be addicted to this? What is it that we're missing? What is it that we're susceptible to, that we would even move towards this kind of thing? We have to find out the psychology of it. And then when we find out the psychology of it, and people like Jerry Mander, the great writer, have written on this, and several other writers, and that is that we have to put out so much psychic and emotional and psychological energy in daily life that, see, part of us is just sick of it because we're not really able to get the things that are sustaining us. The television, which David Icke called the psychiatrist in the corner of the room, which is a great, term. The television is like our best friend in a way, and for children it's like that, because it's not asking anything from you. And it's giving you, relatively speaking, plenty back. So, you see, the parents of the world need to understand this concept so that they can redo the balance of realizing that when you ask the human mind to give, but it doesn't really get anything that it really inherently needs or wants, it will turn elsewhere. And these Madison Avenue think tank individuals are so sophisticated, so incredibly psychologically astute, that they know this. And they understand how to then communicate to the child through the television that this is your spiritual oracle. So naturally, if you think that something is spiritual, you're not going to want to let go of it. It's a conditioning. It's a mixed message that is being given to us. And the only way to crack it is not to turn off the TV or beat the children over the head or blame, the society. or, you know, lament and throw millions of dollars at the problem, which, of course, America will always find a way to do that. No, it's, the problem is to psychologically become empowered to realize, what is this thing offering that we should be offering, but we're not.
For my final question tonight, I just wondered if you could give our readers a little insight into what's going to be happening from this point forward as we move towards 2012 that you see as a divination expert.
Right. Well, that's a great question, and that's partly the reason why I involve myself in divination, is because ultimately, we're, like I said, the celestial clock is now with us. So there are going to be radical changes in the near future, which maybe in hundreds of years we haven't seen. Some people call that time speeding up. Well, that may be, but it may also be that consciousness is slowing down. What it really means on a practical level is that there are certain constellational alignments going to be taking place that are going to help expose the darkness in people. Remember this thing about the psychic hygiene and cleaning out one's own
body? Right.
That is what is really going to happen. Now, naturally, as that happens, you will have physical, social, and political ramifications. There's no doubt about that. And we're already seeing that. But this thing with Martha Stewart and Bill O'Reilly and Michael Jackson, and all, this is just the small potato stuff at the beginning. We're going to see massive uncovering of people's real selves in the media, but also in our own intimate circle, in the world around us, in our neighbors, in the people that we've trusted at work. There's going to be a lot of masks coming down, and it's going to shock both the antagonist and the protagonist. So that's the first thing that's going to happen, is that the masks are going to slip. And I mean that in the Jungian sense, that the masks are coming down, and people are going to get a chance now to see what lies behind the mask. And the reason for seeing that is so that we can clean it up, so that we can deal with it, we can be honest about it, and then we can start. America is going through an underworld cycle in which it can now start to do what it has never done before. And that is clean its own psyche, because it's the filth and toxicity of its own psyche that is bringing about the George Bushes of the world, that's allowing it to be controlled by forces unseen, and that is allowing it to go down the road to destruction. The root of all of that is inside the self of each individual. The collective psyche is very, very dark and toxic in America, and it has to be cleaned out, and the process of cleaning out is now going to start taking place. It already has from 1996, but as every year goes by, more and more and more of that is going to happen. And why the elites of the world are starting to do a lot of saber rattling and starting to move forward with their New World Empire Leviathan idea is because they know that their time is short. Should individuals start to do this psychic homework, they understand what it means for them. So therefore, they're moving quickly to continue an onslaught of lies and deception and war and chaos, because, of course, those who are in chaos inside themselves prefer a climate of chaos, then they don't stand out as much, right?
Sure, right.
The Bushes, the consciousness of the Bushes and the Thatchers and the Clintons and Putins of the world, all of these so-called leaders and all of the people behind the scenes, the Brzezinskis and what have you, these people are so dire, filthy, and toxic inside their hearts and minds. Like the Bible says, the scorpions will come out of their hearts and they'll be saying, where do these scorpions come from? Well, these individuals are so absolutely toxic that they prefer to create mayhem all over the world, because then they feel, acclimatized to that. So there's going to be a counter move from these forces to create worldwide Dionysian bacchanalia in order just for them. Basically, one of the reasons is just to feel acclimatized, just to feel good. And then connecting to my work on Atlantis is another component to this. In the ancient books, it is saying that some of the original alien masters, they have very long lives, but they do eventually pass away. But in ancient times, it turns out that some of these beings were actually interred in a sort of a, what you might want to call, suspended animated state. And in fact, they can be revived. And so some of the legends are saying that towards the 2012, the dark side might stoop to doing this. They may, in fact, awaken some of these true Antichrist, Nephilim, fallen angel beings that are interred in the earth. And the ancient legends are saying that some of these beings are interred in Iraq, because after all, that's where their empires were first, after Atlantis fell. That's where they set up shop later on. And underneath the soil there, underneath the dirt, hundreds of feet deep in underground caverns that the ordinary Iraqi Muslim people haven't the faintest idea which exists. From satellite, they know where these underground tombs are. So just like vampires that are in a sort of a state of suspended animation, some of these legends are claiming that these old Nephilim are still alive and can in fact be revived. Very elaborate story of how they do that, and it involves genetic hybridization and all sorts of necromantic subjects. But if they were ever to awaken these beings, and the Bible says that they will, we could be in very, very serious trouble. So there could be literally another war of Armageddon, in the sense that these beings are loose in the world. And then we're going to really find out something very interesting, if that should ever happen. And this is one of the reasons why the museums in Iraq were looted during the first moments that the troops went in. We know that these sacred objects, very, very sacred ritualistic objects, were appropriated and stolen and from these museums, and nobody has been able to explain why, not even William Henry and others. And I know why, and you will know why, because in any kind of magical ritual, it is extremely important to not only have the sidereal time right, but you must be dressed for the part, so to speak, meaning that you have to have the right ritual objects that are needed for certain kinds of
packs. Yes, sir. Yes.
For certain kind of rituals. And therefore, they have many of these, but they didn't have a few others. And they knew that these were in the museums in Iraq, and they took them, because there's going to be occult rituals of a massive magnitude being done, as they already have been throughout the centuries. And this could mean they're arising. Just like in Revelation 22, it says, those who were not, and who will be again, will arise from the bottomless pit. There's reason to believe that some of the original fallen angels will be revived and to preside over a world of total New World Order and chaos.
Oh, wonderful.
These are the reptilian eye that you see at the top of the dollar bills pyramid. At the top of the pyramid, you see a two-dimensional eye. And it's always been put before us that that's the eye of Ra or the eye of the sun, and it is not. It is the eye of Jehovah. It is the eye of the Nephilim, the fallen ones who rule over all mankind above the 13th level. So this is another one of these strategies that they're ready to employ, and I go a lot into it in the forthcoming book and in other presentations that I do.
Your work is very fascinating, and I do thank you again for spending some time with me tonight.
I appreciate it. I'm always ready to work with people who know what's going on, you know.
Sure, sure.
Send me a link to your site. I'll put it on my website, links page.
Absolutely. Thank you. I will be in touch through email.
Okay, let's do this again whenever you want to.
Okay, great. Michael, thank you so much. You have a good night.